This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 10th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 320. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, they're getting rid of a quarter of the trees in Stanley Park. Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim wants to get rid of the entire elected park board. The NDP is getting rid of the Surrey RCMP and it's getting rid of public hearings for municipal rezonings. Joining me to make sense out of all of this is my guest, Randy Helton, co-founder of CityHallWatch.ca. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Local governments across BC have less power since the October 2022 elections. Councils are under pressure from the NDP government to build more housing. Mayors are sounding the alarm about overcrowded hospitals, schools, and transit. Meanwhile, crews are cutting down a quarter of the trees in Stanley Park to prevent wildfires next summer, but the park board is delaying the release of the report behind the operation. Mayor Ken Sim is on a mission to end the elected park board, a move that has split his ABC Vancouver party. Commissioners Scott Jensen, Brennan Bastavansky, and Laura Christensen are out of ABC. They are now sitting as independents on the park board. I call them JBC. Joining me to make sense out of all of this is Randy Helton, co-founder of CityHallWatch.ca and the fourth place finisher in 2011's mayoral election.
Randy, should the park board's future be in the hands of voters rather than Ken Sim's caucus at City Hall?
Yes, absolutely. I think, like some have suggested, if this is going to happen, it should definitely be up to voters to decide, not between some backroom deal between the premier and the mayor of Vancouver. We're always concerned about anytime public land is involved, the vultures, development industry, real estate speculators, and so on, start to drool when they see land that could become available. So whether it's school land or parkland or city-owned land. We've seen some deals even where the city has sold land at rock bottom prices without having proper assessments done. So this is kind of stuff needs a high level of public scrutiny to make sure that any decisions are done in the public interest. So yeah. Definitely a referendum would be needed.
Yes, decision could come together pretty quickly, passed before Christmas by city council, and then referred to the provincial government, which could amend it in the spring session of the legislature, which begins in February. The next election isn't until 2026. This could be a fait accompli sometime next year, if it goes according to Ken Sim's schedule.
The problem is NDP has a majority and ABC has a majority, so they've got all the cards to play. But through City Hall Watch, we're just very concerned about how democracy plays out locally, provincially, and federally. And there's two things. One is Mayor Ken Sim was talking about being more efficient and accountable. Well, in terms of financial efficiency, he wasn't able to produce any numbers on how much money would be saved by taking the park board into City Hall. People I've talked to say that the savings would be minimal. I've heard other current park board members also saying the savings would be questionable. So financially, it's not probably such a good deal. And in terms of if the mayor is talking about accountability by having the mayor and council be accountable, I would counter that by saying a lot of things that you, Bob, have advocated for as well, including if we want to have accountable decision making at every level, we need proper lobbyist registry, much stricter controls on political donations. We need very good whistleblower policies and implementation. FOI is appalling. The public information transparency is just appalling. So if Mayor Ken Sim really wants to be accountable and have decision making be accountable, those things should be done first.
with a supermajority. We were comparing it to Vision Vancouver, which was a whipped caucus for basically its decade in power. ABC under Ken Sim was a whipped caucus, it's also now a kicked caucus because it's kicked three people out essentially from its big tent. Where does ABC go after this? After just 1 year in power, there's already a split.
That's a good question. Yeah. So maybe this is the best thing that happened because it shows the public that it kind of exposes the whipped the bad habits of our municipal and even provincial government and probably federal as well, with the caucus always voting together, block voting. In fact, just today, I was looking at the video, which I'm sure you know about, by Sean Holman, 2013. It's a documentary called Whipped, and it's quite fascinating to watch because it shows at the time, Gregor Robertson, who was at the time an MLA in Victoria still, that was before, or anyway, there's footage of him as an MLA in Victoria, and John Horgan's in there as well. So I think this goes to another really fundamental issue of block voting by whipped politicians who are supposed to be representing the people who voted for them, not whoever's influencing the party through whatever political influence, donations or whatever. So they may have shot themselves in the foot on the park board, at least for the remainder of the term until 2026. Because they've lost their majority there.
Hemlock looper moth infestation, heat waves in summertime have wreaked havoc, and there's fears of wildfires. That's led the Parks Board to hire a company to cut down 160,000 trees. That's a quarter of the forest in Stanley Park. There's a problem with this. I've asked for the evidence, the evidence-based decision-making behind this, the science behind this, the report. There's got to be something that informed them, that gave them the plan, that gave them the reason why they want to spend what's going to be millions of dollars to do this. But they haven't published it. They haven't published it. They haven't provided it to me by freedom of information. I've asked under the public interest paramount override to release this report. The public has to trust our public institutions. And in order for us to trust the public institutions to make sure they're making the right decisions on our behalf, they've got to be transparent to us, the people who own them. In this case, they're basically saying, trust us, we'll give you a report sometime in the new year. Is that adequate?
Absolutely not. Yeah, that's another very fundamental point you've raised is our public institutions are based on trust, but trust has to be verifiable. And that means the government should be proactively providing information. But when it comes down to a power game and you have to submit a freedom of information request, even then it's often very disappointing, as you found with the forest report for Stanley Park. But we, you know, you and we with City Hall Watch over the past decade and a half, so many times we've had very disappointing results on our request for freedom of information, for numbers, reports, and so on. We get delayed, we get huge fees that are charged, and then what we receive sometimes is just a blank page. So it's very sad actually to see the situation, and it'll only change from public pressure, really. It's not going to be, the improvements will not happen from inside. It's got to be from a high level of public, you know, pressure and scrutiny to make things improve.
One thing before you leave the podcast, I wanted to ask you about one of your recent FOI battles. I did a story on it recently. Earlier this year, the NDP government decided to begin very aggressive moves to rewrite laws and to take more power away from municipalities and order municipalities to build more houses. And part of that was consultations that you wanted to find out who they were listening to, who they were asking for advice, and also why the NDP government targeted certain cities. Tell us about what you went looking for and how it all turned out.
Maybe I'll just, if I can go back one step, I give 100% full-hearted endorsement for Breaker News and Bob Mackin for breaking stories on whistleblower stories. So I encourage anyone who's got useful information, please do share. So back to the FOI, on May 31st, the Housing Minister Ravi Kalyan announced that there was a list, 10 cities on a naughty list of cities that were not doing enough to build housing. And in black and white in text in the press release, he said that the list was developed with economists and experts, and also based on an empirical ranking of the cities. So I had just an innocent citizen. I said, okay, who are these experts? And can I see the actual numbers of the ranking? Just to, we trust you, but we just want to verify. And it took 5 months, all kinds of delays, and it was almost like a comedy of errors with all of the emails that back and forth. But finally, on November 2nd, the day after Housing Minister released Bill 44, which is dramatic, historic changes to the power relationship between provincial government and elected mayors and councils, dramatically weakening municipal government. The list of the experts was, the majority of them were amateur housing activists who have no formal training in housing and urban policy and planning. One math whiz who has also no formal training in urban planning and infrastructure and finance and stuff, just a one-man show. And others with the development industry, including Rennie's company, who many people know. So that was the experts, and th there was no one in on the list who actually w is a respected academic or expert really formally in housing and urban planning. And then the numbers ranking, the page was completely blank. So in terms of being able to verify that the numbers for these naughty cities that were going to have a hammer hitting them on the head with imposed density and regulations, we have no basis to actually trust that they have any solid foundations for the policy. And this goes for the three major housing bills that just passed the Royal Assent just on November 30th. So this is dramatic stuff, and I feel very suspicious that this is not in the public interest, but in the interest of vested interests, particularly real estate development people. And it could have very serious consequences for renters across the province with demo eviction and disruption and displacement. And it also opens a door for vast amount of funds coming in from speculators and global funds buying up real estate across even in small municipalities in British Columbia. So a big problem. Something needs more public attention and more media attention.
What was troubling about this also was that it took so long. I mean, this is information the government could have easily included in the news release back at the end of May. Here they are not only charging you a $10 application fee, but turning around and then sending you an invoice to try to scare you away.
Yes, well, the first response was that they couldn't reply to me because they couldn't provide the information because it involved the Ministry of Indigenous Affairs. And I questioned that, and they said, "Oh, sorry, we made a mistake. That they're not involved." Then they kept on pushing the deadlines back for under legislation. There's very very clear deadlines, like 30 days to respond. They kept pushing that back and violating them. Gave me an invoice for $180. I paid. Eventually, they said, "Oh, sorry, we actually realized it doesn't take that much time to get 2 pages of information, one of which is completely blank." And they refunded the money the same day they provided the information. So my basic conclusion is that there's no solid basis for the three bills, the policy, and that the housing minister was not acting in good faith. Very disappointing.
That was my guest, Randy Helton, co-founder of cityhallwatch.ca. Take a look at cityhallwatch.ca. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan picks shortage as character of the year for 2023. Egg, and Scam finished in second and third place. A total of 58 different characters were nominated for the honor of Character of the Year. The country struggled with different types of shortages during the year, commentators said. There were egg shortages leading to a controversial egg import policy, labor shortages with business leaders calling for more migrant workers, and power shortages. In Kyoto news, Japan top spokesman allegedly received 10 million yen kickback. Chief Cabinet Secretary Hirokazu Matsuno, Japan's top government spokesman, is alleged to have received more than $70,000 from fundraising functions hosted by his party faction. Matsuno said he has no intention to resign. Matsuno belongs to the ruling Liberal Democratic Party's largest faction, formerly headed by slain Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, which has been recently suspected to have pooled secret funds amounting to over 100 million yen. In the Hong Kong Free Press, artist behind Freedom Graffiti Across Hong Kong sentenced to a one-year probation order. Chan King-fei had said that the graffiti was an emotional outlet that allowed him to express the importance of financial freedom when the declining economy shrank his income and savings. It'll shrink it a little bit more because Chan has been ordered to pay 26,500 Hong Kong dollars in compensation. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, how Portland's Krampus Parade celebrates the naughty side of Christmas. According to Alpine folklore, Krampus is St. Nicholas's creepier Christmas companion. While good old St. Nick delivers presents, Krampus punishes naughty children. He carries a sack to carry off the bad kids and is often depicted in chains, symbolizing his service to the saint. Since 2010, a parade of several dozen Christmas demons has marched along Hawthorne Boulevard, singing carols and carrying switches, aiming to awe and delight passers-by. This year's parade goes December 10th. In the Seattle Times, George Clooney visits Seattle, talks Boys in the Boat with its author. A central figure in Daniel James Brown's book and Clooney's film is rower Joe Rance, who overcame extreme poverty and hardship to find gold medal glory in Berlin at the 1936 Olympics with the University of Washington rowing team. The movie opens in theaters on Christmas Day. In the Victoria Times Colonist, NDP government hiding cost of taxpayer-funded defense of Horgan's 2020 snap election call. The BC government sent three lawyers to the one-day appeal hearing in October of this year. The tribunal upheld a BC Supreme Court ruling that the lieutenant governor has the power to act on a premier's advice to call an election whenever he or she sees fit. John Horgan led his party to the BC NDP record 57-seat victory and majority power in the legislature in the October 24, 2020 election, which cost taxpayers a record $51.6 million for Elections BC to administer. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Christine Sinclair, Canada's greatest soccer player. 190 goals, 331 international caps. Burnaby's Sinky got a hero's send-off at BC Place Stadium on December 5th. December 12th? Well, that's Christine Sinclair Day in BC. 12-12 for number 12. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 10th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 10th of December in 1948, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was adopted by the United Nations? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on Twitter, also known as X, as news happens. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.